Before Richard was a Concorde pilot, he was a 747 pilot.
That's correct.
How many of you have flown through O'Hare Field before 1996? Quite a few of you. Since 1996, a lot of you probably have. Since 97, wrong year, it's been a long week. Since 1997, the runways at O'Hare do not cross anymore. This is the man that is responsible for it. Mike, can you pull up that picture on that, that shows that right there. This is the man that averted a disaster. Tell him all about it, Richard.
Yeah, well, we were needing to use the long runway in O'Hare, which is designated 14 right, so we could lift off the weight that we needed to get to London on a very hot, humid, thunderous night in Chicago, with expected fog at London the next day. And we opened up our thrust levers, the airplane started to roll down the runway, and we were accelerating quite nicely, and then air traffic control came up with the clearance by saying, with a command, by saying, Speedbird 298, your takeoff clearance is cancelled. I called stop. My first officer, who was handling the airplane, he put his feet on the brake, selected reverse thrust. I operated the speed brake. We brought the airplane down to a stop. Meanwhile, while we were doing that, the United Airlines Boeing 737-200 crossed in front of me on the runway. Because we stopped, we didn't collide, we didn't cause what could have been the biggest loss of life since two 747s collided in Tenerife. But United 737 had been performing a procedure called land and hold short, where an airplane over here is allowed to land on a cross runway, providing he stops before the runway being used for takeoff. He didn't do that, we nearly collided, and our air safety authorities, certainly in the UK and also supported in Europe, decided it was time that the FAA stopped this land and hold short operation. American and United Airlines claimed that if they didn't do landing and hold short, they'd have to reduce their capacity by 30% in O'Hare. So I'm very pleased to see that the authorities to be decided, let's tackle this, and they've delinked any linked runway. So all the runways are now totally separate, and the chance of a mishap like the one I had has now vanished.
And the reason he is a hero and he doesn't want to be called that and the reason he's called a hero, and Richard really, he's humble. 332 people on his board, plus the crew, 100 plus crew on the United flight. So that's 400, probably roughly 450 lives that were saved. That would have been a disaster. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're also here to celebrate not only the 50th anniversary of Concorde, but also the 50th anniversary of the Boeing 747, which is often referred to as the Queen of the Sky.
A tail as tall as a six-story building. A wingspan stretching longer than the Wright brothers' first flight. The first airplane with two aisles running through the cabin. A plane so innovative, it would forever change the way the world flies. The year, 1965. With air travel on the upswing, airlines struggle to handle the increasing number of passengers with relatively small aircraft. Juan Tripp, founder of Pan American World Airways, tells Boeing that he needs an airplane that accommodates twice as many passengers as the enormously popular Boeing 707. The proposed jetliner's design is so revolutionary that it requires special production facilities. So, in 1966, the company begins constructing one of the largest buildings in the world in Everett, Washington. Boeing chief engineer Joe Sutter is asked to lead development of the 747 program. His assignment? Build the world's first wide-body airplane for both passengers and freight. The jumbo aircraft would carry more than 400 passengers, twice as many as the 707, and have a distinctive hump, allowing extremely tall or long freight to be loaded through a unique nose cargo door. Together, Some 50,000 Boeing employees make aviation history, building the 747-100 in less than 28 months. On February 9th, 1969, the Queen of the Skies takes flight for the first time, entering service 11 months later, launching Pan Am's New York to London route. The 747 has changed a lot over the years. The 747-200 entered service in 1971 with more powerful engines and increased payload. The Dash 300 featured a long upper deck to carry more passengers. And the 747-400 incorporated winglets and advanced avionics to deliver greater range, lower noise, and better fuel economy. And today's high-capacity 747-8 offers airlines the lowest operating costs and best economics of any large passenger or freighter in its class. In the past 50 years, the 747 has hauled nearly the equivalent of the world's population. It's ferried space shuttles across the United States. It's appeared on postage stamps across the globe. Been the aircraft of every U.S. president since Ronald Reagan. And it's even starred in movies. Thanks to the support of our Boeing 747 customers over the past half century, the Queen of the Skies continues to be built today. Opening doors, inspiring explorers, connecting the world still, after 50 years, like nothing else in the air.
Anniversary to both Boeing and to British Airways, or Concorde itself. Joining us on the stage now, we got some representatives that can tell us more about the 747. Dave Loffing is from Boeing.
Yep.
Raise your hand, Dave, so they know who you are and throw stuff at. We got from NASA, we've got Troy Asher. Troy did a lot of testing with the 747. And on the far end, we got Joe Engel. He's a shuttle astronaut, if that name rings a bell at all. And welcome to all of you gentlemen. Richard, I'm going to throw the first question at you. Yeah, please. I'm going to throw the first question at Richard now. Richard, be careful how you answer this because there's three of them and
three
one of you.
One. Yeah.
You flew both a 747 and Concorde. You got a preference?
I think maybe Concorde would win my vote.
Oh, there goes Dave. He's going to punch you.
Okay.
No, I think Dave would understand that.
I do, yes.
David, it's no longer being made. It is now being made mainly a cargo.
True.
And the Dash 8 was here this week with UPS. That's
it was.
The newest model. That one, by the way, was just off the assembly line. That's only 2 weeks old.
Yeah. Last month, it was right in front of my office window. So, yeah.
What? How? When Boeing first started making the 747, this was back in the 60s. If I remember right, there was only like, they said, we'll make 400 and that'll be it.
That'll be it. And it was going to be just short term. The future was supersonics. At the time, one trip in the video that kind of kicked off the overall program, that was really the sole purpose. And they wanted it later on for other purposes as freight. And so really, from the very beginning, Joe Sutter and the Incredibles really configured the airplane to be a passenger airplane, but also to be a freighter from the very beginning. And I got the fortunate opportunity when I was an early career engineer at Boeing that actually found the original, we called them the Ed Sersinas files. So Ed Sersinas was an engineer at Boeing that did the trade study on the fuselage configuration of the airplane. So, remember at the time too, there was the C-5 Galaxy competition that Boeing lost to Lockheed eventually. But I had the actual drawings that did the trade study all by hand, looking at all different configurations, and I think there'll be some pictures of them up on the screen a little later as we talk. And the everything from an aardvark that looked like the Beluga that flies for Airbus today to the A380, really the full double-decker, longer version of the 747, and eventually became the iconic shape and the hump and the what we call a deck and a half configuration we have today. And really what won the day is speed was still king. And if you look at the wing on the 47, now that the Concorde no longer flies, the 47 is still the fastest jet in the sky from a commercial standpoint. It was wetted area is what won the day. The configuration had the best optimal design from an aerodynamics point of view, and also was enabled the unique nose cargo door that makes it live on today as a super successful freighter throughout the world.
When when 747 first came online, you went from the 100 to the 200 to the 300 to the 400 pretty rapidly. What was the biggest change on each series as she came out?
Yeah, so primarily for the early airplanes, any major leap in aviation is especially in commercial, is very much based by engine technology. I'll say for the 100, it was really the first major large bypass with the JT9Ds. And so the subsequent models were all about just increasing performance, takeoff, payload capability. And really the big change was really on the 400, where it was the major flight deck upgrade that went from a three-person crew to a two-person crew with all new avionics. And then with the Dash 8, the 747-8, it was really my assignment coming into Boeing right out of college was figure out how you fit these 787 engines on the 478 wing and what do you got to do. And that was really the next biggest change for the 747, a new wing, new aerodynamics, and it was the first stretch we've ever done. We've shrunk the airplane, as Troy knows, with the 747SP, but we had never successfully launched a program that stretched it. And except for maybe the Dreamlifter might have been the first, actually, that I think about it, and then eventually the 747-8.